Welcome to Sunday Morning at Faith Assembly, featuring the ministry of Senior Pastor Phil Goss. We're glad you've joined us. Now, here's Pastor Goss.
We're in a series called God's Purpose and Problems. This is going to be the last of that series today. And we've been looking at this one verse in Romans chapter 8, verse 28, that means so much to us as Christians, that you and I have to come to that place where this verse kind of works to help us in our life, because there's some key elements in it that we've looked at over the course of the last few weeks. First of all, we know something. In other words, I'm convinced of it. I never forget it. I know this, that God causes everything. No matter what I'm going through or facing in life, God causes everything to work together for the good. No matter how bad it may seem, no matter what's going on, that God uses everything in my life, any problem I have, anything that's happening, good or bad, fair or unfair, God uses it to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according, and we're going to look at this a little bit later this morning, to His purpose for them. So that's what we've been looking at. Just as a way of review, we've looked at God uses problems to correct us. There's times when you and I are off on the wrong path, and God takes the problems that we've created and brings them to turn us around. He uses problems to inspect us. He puts us through the fire to help purify us, to help make us more like Him, to see what's inside. He uses problems to protect us, Paul's thorn. He says, look, I want to help you here, and I'm going to protect you. And sometimes the things that we face are there for our protection. Connect us. God wants us to be together. And God uses problems not to separate us, but to unite us and to bring us into other people's life. God uses problems to perfect us, to help us become more and more like Him every day of our life. Now, there's two more we're going to look at today, and that is what we're going to consider. Now, I just want to give you a little reminder. God doesn't cause all problems. He doesn't have to. You and I make enough problems on our own. We're good at it. And so He will take whatever's going on in your life, whatever problem is there, and He will use it and work with it. Now, at the same time, the enemy, Satan, is wanting to work against us. He's wanting us not to follow God. He's wanting us to get discouraged. He wants us to quit and give up. He wants us to do our own thing, go our own way, be our own person, think we got a better idea. And He wants us to get sidetracked. You and I make the choice of who we're going to follow. And so we just have to understand there's always some pain involved. There's always some difficulties involved. But I am the one who decides what's going to happen. You're alive today. Therefore, you have problems. But God doesn't only work in our problems. He also works in the good times as well, doesn't He? Everything. Everything. So let's add two more. Next one is, God uses problems to direct us. To direct us. Now, we're going to look at a guy by the name of Joseph. Joseph is a very unique character in the Bible. Very unique. He is one of the few, if not the only one, well, no, there's Job there too, that we have no negative against him. When you look at his history and his life all the way through, there isn't a negative. At best, you could come up with, yeah, he had this dream that God told him that his brother's going to bow down to him, and he told his brothers that. Maybe he was a little cocky when he did it. We don't know. But it seems like Joseph is this guy, when you read about him, pretty good guy. And yet he has problems. You see, it begins with his brothers hating him because he was dad's favorite. Parents, I hope you never have one of your kids as your favorite. It only creates problems. That was free, by the way. Not even in my notes. I just, you know, came up with that. And the reason he was dad's favorite is dad was, you know, at this time there's multiple wives and people involved, but he had this wife that he really loved. She wasn't able to have children. Finally, she has a son, Joseph. So this is special to him. He gets this coat that represents who he is and how he's there, and the brothers just despise him. Well, one day, dad sends Joseph out to go check on him. That's really good. The younger one checking on all the other 10. That goes over well, doesn't it? You know, that's really good. And so he goes out there and checks on them. As they see him come, they say, let's kill him. Let's kill him. Let's just do it. One of them says, no, let's not do that. Let's at least, keep him alive. So they take him, they take the robe off of him, they throw him in a well, and they take an animal and slaughter it and take the coat and mix it in the blood. And they take the coat back to dad and said, he's dead. A wild animal ate him. And so dad grieves, and at the meantime, a caravan comes through, and they decide to sell him into slavery, and they sell him to this caravan that is going into Egypt. He ends up in the house of Potiphar. Now, Potiphar's a pretty important person. He was the captain of the guard for Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. Now, the problem was that Potiphar had a wife. That didn't sound right, did it? That Potiphar's wife wasn't a good woman, and she wanted to sleep with Joseph, and she kind of came on to him and everything, and Joseph refused to do this and ran away, and as he was running away, she grabs his cloak and keeps it, and then Potiphar gets home, and she tells her husband, he tried to rape me. Genesis 39, verse 19. Potiphar was furious when he heard his wife's story about how Joseph had treated her. So he took Joseph, threw him into the prison where the king's prisoners were held, and there he remained. But the Lord was with Joseph in the prison and showed him his faithful love. And the Lord made Joseph a favorite with the prison warden. And before long, the warden put Joseph in charge of all the other prisoners and over everything that happened in the prison. And the warden had no more worries because Joseph took care of everything. The Lord was with him and caused everything he did to succeed. Well, okay, that's good, but still, unfair. Brothers sell you, now falsely accused, and you're in jail. Life isn't going real well right now, right? And then there's two guys in prison that are there with him, and they have a dream. They're looking for somebody to interpret it. They come to Joseph, and he does it. And so the Pharaoh's cupbearer and baker were in jail, and the cupbearer, Joseph said, look, you called this dream, you're going to be called up by Pharaoh, he's going to kill you. But to the chief cupbearer, he said, look, you're going to be called up, and you're going to be restored to your position. Verse 14, Genesis 40. Please remember and do me a favor when things go well for you. Mention me to Pharaoh so he might let me out of this place. For I was kidnapped from my homeland, the land of the Hebrews, and now I'm here in prison, but I did nothing to deserve it. Now, that's not unusual to hear from a prisoner, they did nothing to deserve it. Nobody ever thinks they did anything to deserve it, right? But Joseph was telling the truth. He didn't. Verse 23, Pharaoh's chief cupbearer, however, forgot all about Joseph, never giving him another thought. Oh, good. Things are going well. Genesis 41. 2 full years later, wow, Pharaoh had a dream that he was standing on the bank of the Nile River, and suddenly the cupbearer goes, oh, you know what? I know this guy in jail who can interpret dreams. Why don't you call him and ask him? They brought Joseph in. Joseph told Pharaoh, you're going to have 7 years of famine, 7 years of good. You need to prepare for this. You need to take care of this. Pharaoh's so impressed. He says, well, why don't you run the show for me since you're so wise and you know everything? And so I'm going to put you second in command. Pharaoh was number one. Joseph was number two. Verse 46. He was 30 years old when he began serving in the court of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. And when Joseph left Pharaoh's presence, he inspected the entire land. All throughout his 20s, Joseph is falsely accused, hated by his brothers, sold into slavery, forgotten about. And now finally, he's at a place where it looks like things are going well. He's up in this position. And you would think that in spite of this, everything would be great. But in spite, you know what? Joseph is still struggling. How do we know that? Look at verse 50, Genesis 41. During this time, before the first of the famine years, so in that seven-year period when things were going well, two sons were born to Joseph and his wife, Arsinoe, the daughter of Potiphar, the priest of On. Joseph named his older son Manasseh, for he said, notice, God has made me forget all my troubles and everyone in my father's family. That's not true, is it? Oh, forget about it. I won't remember it. That's not true when you say it, is it? Hello? You're acting like the first service now. Come on. No, it's not true. But notice what he named. Verse 52. Joseph named the second son Ephraim, for he said, God has made me fruitful in this land of my grief. He's still carrying it, isn't he? He's still hurting. It's still painful. You know, when things don't go well for you, things are still painful. But you know, there's a little verse that we've been looking at that says that in everything, God works. God brought him to this place. And so, you know, because of this famine that's going on, Joseph's brothers now come and ask for food. We got to get something. So they go, and there's Joseph. They don't recognize him, but he recognizes them. And he does some things to try to figure out, is the father still alive? Is there any more kids? What's going on? And he finally gets to a place where he reveals himself to them. They're standing before him. He says, I'm Joseph, your brother. What do you think their first feeling is? Uh-oh, this probably isn't going to go well, right? But notice, 45 verse 4, please come closer, he said to them. Yikes. So they came closer. And he said again, I'm Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into slavery in Egypt. But don't be upset and don't be angry with yourselves for selling me to this place. It was God who sent me here ahead of you to preserve your lives. Now, I don't think that's how I would respond. You? Okay, boys, time's up. Time to pay the piper, right? Look what you've done. I'm here now. You're mine. No, what's he say? Forget it. Don't be angry. God did this. And what we see in Joseph's life, from somewhere early in his 20s, he starts at his 30s, there's another 14 years, so he's in his 40s. All of that time, he is going from this to this to this, doing everything that was right, being falsely accused, and yet never working out good, carrying pain with him. And yet he's smart enough to understand one simple fact that you and I have to understand. All things work together for good to those who love God. Because God got Joseph to where he wanted him to be. Now you see, couldn't God just tell us where he wants us to be and we go there? Wouldn't that make much better? No, it doesn't work like that, does it? We want to go the express route, he takes us the back road. We want to go easy, he makes it a little hard at times. But he is directing us. And here's what I know. I don't care what you've been through in your life. God is at work directing you to the place he wants to get you. It might be unfair. It might be wrong. It might be hard. But God is working. And what we see is, you know, Joseph, I'm going to get you to this point. We're going to use the problems and the difficulties and the hardships and the things that are difficult. We're going to use them to get you here. God works. Proverbs 16:9, we make our plans, but the Lord determines our steps. Psalm 37:23, the Lord directs the steps of the godly. He delights in every detail of their lives. So, how do I let God direct me? There's two keys that you have to put into place into your life if God is going to direct you through the everything. Number one, will I keep being faithful even when treating unfairly? No matter what happened to him, Joseph still served God. No matter how unfair it was, Joseph kept his relationship with God alive. Now, you see, you and I have a tendency that when things are going unfairly, we don't serve God, we blame God. Right? God, why are you treating me like this? God, this isn't fair. Now, life's not fair. And if you want fair, wait till the end of February and you can go to the fair. But he kept serving God. Even when he was treated wrong, even when it looked like God had bailed on him, even when it looked like God didn't care, because we've all accused God at one time or another of, God, do you love me? God, why are you doing this to me? God, why are you letting this happen? God, this isn't right. I'm innocent. And no matter what happens, the enemy's there going, just go your own way. God doesn't care for you. He's not working in your life. Why don't you just do what you want to do, and you do what you think is best, and you just go the way you want to go. Don't keep being faithful here. Look where it's getting you. It's getting you prison, falsely accused, sold, hated, forgotten. Will I keep being faithful even when treated unfairly by life? That's a big question, isn't it? Well, how can you keep being faithful, Pastor? It's easy. God's being faithful because in everything, God's working. I don't always see it. I don't always understand it. That's why in this verse, we know. Okay, you got that? Okay, secondly, will I forgive others who may be involved? Do you know that sometimes the people you don't like, God's using? Do you know that sometimes the people that you would just like to see them get theirs, God's got them in that place just for you? Joseph's brothers. Now, it doesn't make what they did right. But Joseph had to understand, look, it wasn't about them, it's about God. And God is using sometimes the people we don't like to accomplish his purpose in our life. That means I have to let it go, doesn't it? And I should burst into song, let it go, but I won't. I have to not hold it against them. I have to release it. But you see, here's the problem in this room today. There are people here this morning who you're so mad about what somebody did to you, you're so upset about how something has happened to you, and you're holding on to it, and you're angry, and if you ever got in a place where Joseph, where they were standing in front of you and you had the power, they would get theirs. None of this, oh, don't worry about it, it's okay. Right? Maybe that person standing in front of you who did that to you, God is going to use to get you to a place he wants you to go to. And if you react wrongly, you'll end up going to another place, won't you? And God won't be able to direct you, and you'll end up in a place you wouldn't want to really be in. So what we learn from this is God's directing us, but sometimes the way he directs us isn't the way we would choose. We just have to know that in everything, God is working it all out for my good. And I will be faithful even when things don't seem to be right and I am treated unfairly, and I will forgive others rather than holding a grudge. And Joseph said to his brothers, don't be upset. Don't be angry with yourselves. It was God. It was God. And he put me here to preserve your life. Wow. So God wants you to understand that he can take the problems you're going through and direct your life to where he wants it to be. No matter how unfair it is, no matter how much you don't understand it, God is still working. Agree? That was pretty lame. Like it or not, there it is. Final thing, God uses problems to reflect him. To reflect him. We're going to look at a guy by the name of Moses. You see, children of Israel have been slaves for over 400 years. Time has come for God to bring them out. They become large enough in order for that to happen. And he chooses a guy by the name of Moses. So Moses goes, delivers the message to Pharaoh. You know all the thing about the plagues and everything else. So there's Passover night, and they all get prepared, ready to move out. Passover angel comes through. Pharaoh says, get out of here. They're all packed up. They get out, and they go. But when they go, where do they end up? They end up in front of the Red Sea. That didn't work out too well. We thought, again, there was an easy path to where you wanted us to go to, but evidently not. And so we find ourselves at that point in Exodus 14, verse 15. The Lord said to Moses, why are you crying out to me? Tell the people to get moving. Now, if I'm Moses, I'm going, where? Pharaoh's behind us. The sea's in front of us. Where? Well, God gets clear. Pick up your staff. Raise your hand over the sea. Divide the water so the Israelites can walk through the middle of the sea on dry ground. Yeah, right. Right? And I'll harden the hearts of the Egyptians, and they will charge in after the Israelites, and my great glory will be displayed through Pharaoh and his troops, his chariots, his charioteers. When my glory is displayed through them, all Egypt will see my glory and know that I am the Lord. Here's what he's saying to Moses, to you and I. Moses, this isn't about you. This is about me. Moses, I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for me. You see, when you get into a problem, you make it all about you, don't you? Look at the person next to you and say, you do that. You do that. I don't, but you do. Okay? You know, and God says, look, Moses, get moving. I'm going to take care of this. And when I take care of it, I'm getting the credit. And if you read the story of the children of Israel as they go through, and finally when they get into the possessed land, everybody's terrified of them. Why? Because this story's been repeated all throughout history, and now it's become the legend, and people say, don't mess with them. Their God's pretty big. His glory. You see, everything that you do in your life is for God's glory if you're a Christian. And the verse that we read, remember when we read that Romans passage? All things work together for the good of those who love God, and little condition here, are called according to his purpose for them. His purpose, his glory. He wants the credit. It's not about you. It's about him. A few chapters later in Exodus 18, Moses told his father-in-law, not a Jewish person, not a Christian, about everything the Lord had done to rescue Egypt from Israel from Pharaoh and the Egyptian. He also told him about the problems they had faced along the way and how the Lord had delivered his people from all their troubles. Jethro was delighted when he heard about all that the Lord had done for Israel as he brought them out of Egypt. Praise be to the Lord, Jethro. Jethro, the father-in-law, said, for he has saved you from the Egyptians and from Pharaoh. He has rescued Israel from the power of Egypt. Now notice the next verse. I know now that the Lord is greater than all other gods because his people have escaped from the proud and cruel Egyptians. See, what do? When we go through problems, there's other people watching, aren't they? There's other people there that are taking note. And you and I go, God, I don't know what I'm going on here, and I don't know how you're going to use this, and I know it can be corrected, and I know it can be all these things, and Lord, that really doesn't matter too much. I'm just going to keep being faithful, keep doing what's right. Because, God, when we go through this, as we go through this, I want to make sure you understand something. I understand it's about you and not about me. Because when we go through problems, we get kind of selfish, don't we? We kind of make it about us. People don't treat us right in the midst of a problem. Oh, you don't care. You don't love me. You didn't say anything. You didn't send me a card. You didn't call me. You're doing things. I don't like it. It's not fair. It's not right. Why are you treating me like this? It's not about you. It's about God. Psalm chapter 50, verse 14. Make thankfulness your sacrifice to God and keep the vows you made to the Most High. Then call on me when you're in trouble. And I will rescue you, and you will give me glory. Romans 6:13. Don't let any part of your body become a tool of wickedness to be used for sinning. Instead, give yourselves completely to God since you've been given new life, and use your whole body as a tool to do what is right for the glory of God. God, is what I'm doing giving you glory. Let me put it to you another way. God, I want you to get the credit when things turn out good, because it's all about you. 2 Corinthians, we now have this light shining in our hearts, but we ourselves are like fragile clay jars containing this great treasure. Stop there for a moment. I want to make sure you understand this. The light he's talking about is the presence of God within us. We have this great treasure, this great light within us. And he says that treasure within you is like fragile clay jars. Well, we don't use fragile clay jars, so let me give you a modern term for that. A styrofoam cup. How much is that cup worth? Nothing. But you put something valuable inside of it, and now suddenly it's worth a whole lot more, isn't it? And so what the writer here is saying, we have the presence of God in our bodies, or styrofoam cups. What an analogy. This makes it clear that our great power is from God. It's not from ourselves. Look at who we are. We're pressed on every side by troubles, but we're not crushed. We're perplexed, but not given to despair. We're hunted down, but never abandoned by God. We get knocked down, but we're not destroyed. Through suffering, our bodies continue to share in the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be seen in our bodies. Down a few more verses. All of this is for your benefit, and as God's grace reaches more and more people, there will be great thanksgiving, and God will receive more and more glory. That is why we never give up. Though our bodies are dying, our spirits are being renewed every day. For our present troubles are small, won't last very long, yet they produce for us a glory that vastly outweighs them and will last forever. So we don't look at the troubles we can see now. Rather, we fix our gaze on things that cannot be seen. For the things we see now will soon be gone, but the things we cannot see will last forever. So how do I make sure I give God glory in the midst of that, of all the stuff? Two things. Will I focus on representing God in my problems? Will I not think about me and how hard it is and how unfair it is and how I don't like this and how long this has been going on and all that's happening and how I've been treated and everything else? Will I quit focusing on those things and will I focus on God and say, God, look, in the midst of all of this, I want to make sure of one thing, that no matter what happens, when people look at me, I'm representing you well. That I have nothing to be embarrassed about or ashamed of. Oh, I shouldn't have said that. Oh, I shouldn't have done that. Oh, I shouldn't have. God, I want to represent you here. Because it's not about me, it's about you. And so will I get my focus on off of me, how I'm going through this and how long it's going on and how bad it is and how I don't like it and how, and you know. And will instead I get my eyes off me and get them on him and say, God, through the midst of all of this, I want to make sure you get the credit when everything's done. I want to make sure that people know you live in me and that as I do this, God, you receive the glory and I represent you because it's all about you. It's not about me. Good? And again, pretty poor, but will I focus on that? You see, you'll treat life differently if you get your eyes on the right thing. But if you keep your eyes and your heart and your mind on the wrong thing, you're going to go a wrong direction. So God, my problems are here for me to represent you and to show how you work everything together for good. Secondly, will I frequently thank God for what he's doing? Now, I'm not saying you've got to, oh God, I thank you for this problem. I'm just so glad it's here. That's called stupid. No, God, I don't like what's going on now. God, this is really hard and difficult for me. And I don't know why this is happening, and I don't know what's happening, but God, I am so grateful to you and so thankful to you because I know that all things will work together for my good because I am called according to your purpose. And the one that lives in me is greater than the one that is in the world. And at the name of Jesus, every knee has to bow. And God, I know you're still in control of it all. And I give you the credit for it all. And I know you're going to be faithful through it all. And God, it's about you, not about me. Every problem that you have, every success that you have, every bad thing that you have happened to you, every good thing that you have happened to you, God should get the credit for it. You and I live for him, not for ourselves. And so God will use everything in your life to reflect his glory, his presence, his strength, his ability. So, are you focusing on, God, I'm your child. I want to serve you well. I want you to get honor here. And God, thank you for being faithful to me. Help me to be faithful to you. Isn't it good to know that in everything, God causes it to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purpose for them. What a great knowledge.
Thank you for joining us for today's service. If you would like to talk with someone about what you've heard, please visit our website at faith.ag or call us at 239-543-2700. If you're in the Fort Myers area and don't already have a church home, you're invited to join us for Sunday morning at 8:15 and 10:45 a.m. Faith Assembly is located at 7101 Bayshore Road. Join us again next week for Sunday Morning. Faith Assembly Sunday Morning is a production of Faith Assembly Media Tech, North Fort Myers, Florida.